Welcome back to the Batuta Advocate Radio Show. You're joined by myself, Clancy Overall, editor of the Batuta Advocate, and Errol Parker, editor at large. The two old bulls here today. There's no Wendell or Effie, but, you know, we've actually asked them to sit this one out because we're talking to a kindred spirit today, a man who, much like us, is a trophy on the shelf of Australian literary arts and culture. Sex icon export, I'm now, you know, very proud to say. And all-round good guy. Thanks for joining us, Angus Sampson.
Thank you so much. That's a lovely introduction. I've never been just called a trophy before. I guess that's a compliment.
What was that show you were in where you played the trophy? It was the one where you had a drinking problem and then you had to smoke weed instead.
Are you talking about work?
No, I think it was it Paper Giants?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, Magazine Wars. Paper Giant. Yeah, Paper Giants. Two. That was. I really enjoyed that. I'm not a smoker, despite my
aesthetic.
Yeah, and it's amazing, Clancy, how often when I visit Australia, people think I'm you.
Yeah.
in regional towns, especially. The last time I was in Australia last year, I went up to Port Macquarie for a rugby league lunch.
Sounds heavenly.
Sat with Noel Crusher Cleal, the great Crusher, and there was like a female part of you know, football team there that was raising funds as well, and they asked me to like draw the winner, the raffle winner or something, with Matty Johns, and the girls had no idea who I was, and they're like, wait, are you you're Batuta. I'm like, what? They're like, you're Batuta. You are. No, you are. You bloody are. And I had no idea what they were talking about.
I'm Aaron Woods, and, actually.
Or Sharon Woods. Sharon Woods. Remember when he used to have that headband?
Yeah.
That plastic headband.
Oh, Sharon Woods is one of the great nicknames that just won't die either. You play like a girl in one season, Sharon.
No, but those corpies really are the type of corpy that you get paid with the cash that's still warm out of the poker machine. You know,
yes, that's exactly that. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I did see envelopes being handed to the MC.
And then the MC says goodnight and walks straight back in and feeds straight back down the gullet of Pelican Pete.
The club knows it's coming
Queen,
back.
Queen of the Nile.
Yeah. Yeah. That money leaves the machines for 45 minutes.
But yes, now I'm always happy to be back in Australia. I'm speaking to you from California in the United States of America, where I've lived for the last maybe 10th year here, 10th or 11th.
Yeah, so you're very well, well and truly an export at this point. Do you have like a brat pack of, you know, who do you cut around with? You got a little bit of La Paglia action? Like, what are we talking here? Yeah.
Bruce Spence, Bill Hunter, John Mellion, and me. Yeah. As a rule, I don't seem to see a lot of Antipodeans here, aside from my two best mates from back home, Taika Waititi and Lee Winnell, New Zealander and an Australian who live, you know, near me, or I live near them. And anything that sort of reminds me that I shouldn't be here, I guess, on some level, which is what I sort of have to deal with on, you know, when I look in the mirror, I'm like, wow, I really still look homeless. And I guess I don't want to feel like I shouldn't be an option for filmmakers and storytellers here. And so, yeah, I don't, you know, always happy to have people come and stay. got a nice big home here that you know, I've been a benefit of other people's hospitalities or beneficiaries, so I want to offer that to other people. But yeah, look, it's where I live is I'm up in the an ex avocado grove.
All right.
And some of the trees are still here, and there's lots of Australian Moreton Bay figs that were a gift of the Australian government along the tree lines. End of my street is where the Griswolds live from the first vacation, even though it was meant to be Chicago. I take great joy in not seeking the familiar too much.
Now, you're quite an all-rounder at the start of your career. You were on radio. You did your Tony Martin tandem thing. You were on Greeks of the Roof in Greek Face. Look, you would ask me if I wasn't sitting in front of your Wikipedia page right now and ask me, where did Angus Sampson come out of? I'd tell you what I'd heard through the grapevine in the pubs in Sydney, which was you were an improv guy. Is that the yarn?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my sister befriended a gentleman by the name of Ewan Campbell.
Right.
And Ewan was the warm-up guy for the midday show for Ray Martin back in the day. Also very funny, very clever, very generous. And she had said to him, oh, I think my brother could do something like you or what have you. And so he recommended that we go and watch some stuff at Belvoir Theatre in Surrey Hills, and then which my dad and my sister and I went. And, I basically was just an average, layabout. I didn't really have anything going for me or any interests other than charcoal chicken and chips. And my sister and father encouraged me to sign up for like some impro classes. And I think by the end of that year, I'd won something at the Comedy Store,
like
whatever it was, the best something, whatever. And then got invited to perform at Belvoir Street. And I started to learn off people like Lynn Pierce, who was the improv teacher at NIDA. And, I guess I didn't realise you could act as a job. Yeah. I went to school in Armidale in northern New South Wales. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know there was a thing called Australian Theatre for Young People. So
basically working as a opal miner in Lightning Ridge seemed kind of more realistic to you at that age.
Shout out to the Deschen family, Deschen Goat Depot. I never knew what I wanted to do. Like, I sort of hoped to be a foreign diplomat when I was a kid, and then I realized you had to study. Then I thought I could be a marine biologist.
Oh, everyone has that for a few years.
Yeah, you need to study for about 8 years, and then you spend the rest of your life having to drive around in a completely fucked Subaru up and down the coast, having to touch urchins and starfish.
I've got about 37 urchin tips in my feet. Yeah, the reality is you just don't know. I still don't know.
But you were playing footy, weren't you? Was that what life was all about?
Yeah, I tried to.
Chicken and chips and football.
Yeah, at that time, I guess, you don't know what you're doing. And I was like, yeah, right, I guess I meant to go to uni. I meant to do this, but I didn't have the attention span. I didn't have the intellect or care to do that. I mean, I enjoyed going to Sydney uni parties. Not to bore you, I thought, I'll just play rugby. And I didn't realise that you, in addition to having some natural talent, you actually are meant to work hard on it as well. And I realised there and then I just enjoyed the theatrics of it. I just enjoyed the speeches, the boat races afterwards, the camaraderie.
So was there like a time and place where you decided to take acting seriously, where it started to become essentially what you decided to do with your life?
Yeah, you thought, I'm not going to be a Kefu, I'm going to be a king, Kidman. A king, Graham, Graham Kennedy, that's what I'm going to be.
I was working at the Burwood Hotel in Sydney the graveyard shift.
In the real inner west.
Mm. I grew up in Croydon for a chunk of time next door. I played at West Rugby, at West Harbour now, but Western Suburbs back then, I was there when they switched over and helped design the emblem. I wasn't a big fan of the earring on the pirate.
There's quite an alumni of West Harbour. There's you and actually David Lepepe of Gang of Youths fame was a West Harbour footballer.
Nice. One of the boys who plays the young Rock.
Oh, yeah.
On that TV show. Yeah. He's a West Harbour lad. And the girl from, what's that next Game of Thrones or whatever, House of Dragons?
Yeah.
The Australian girl, Millie Alcock, her brother, I think, is playing hooker there at the moment. But my dad's still involved down at Westies.
I've heard about old Doc Sampson.
I remember watching a game once and they did a shout out to him on the ABC. They said, oh, it's the first game he's missed in 22 years. I was like, wow. And so, yeah, I went down there once last year for the first time. I wanted to see the Concord Oval when I was out there filming a couple of shows because we had the writer's strike here last year. Yeah, so right. I managed to get
out. So you got involved in club footy.
Oh, mate. Anyway, it's a great. I ball boyed for West. I actually used to be a ball boyed a Bledisloe Cup test. So I've done. I got into trouble for holding the trophy up in the ball boys' room. Yeah, I basically had a lot of time around rugby, and so I guess I just thought that's, you know, basically when you play rugby, all you want is kit. You just want the tracksuits and the jerseys and the shorts. And so, yeah, that was sort of what I wanted to do. And then in answer to your question 32 minutes ago, I got asked to be to teach some impro over in Randwick. One of the students in there was a producer on a television program called that was about to start called Recovery, the ABC, 1996 this was.
Dylan Lewis.
The great Dylan Lewis, yeah. And, yeah, they said, would you do you want to do a story? You know, I was like, what do you mean? They're like, well, it's sort of like Hey, Hey, It's Saturday, but for, like, alternate youths. And I was like, okay. And so I did a story. They had a 15-year-old girl hanging out with her friends, and then they got me in my Moleskins and RMs and Ralph Lauren polo shirt to go and hang out with what 15-year-old or 16-year-old boys in Sydney do, and that was hang out at Macca's on Parra Road. And so I was hanging out with these Australian Lebanese legends. I can't remember if it ever went to air. And we shot that, and I rang her up maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, and I said, am I working for you guys or not? And she was like, I'll call you back. And she rang me back about 12 minutes later, and she said, would you be interested in playing a character called The Enforcer? And I was like, what's that? She's like, well, you know how, like, when police put criminals in the car, they push their head in and so they don't bump their head? I'm like, yeah. She goes, that's The Enforcer. I go, when do I start? That was the description. I was like, I didn't know what the show was. And I ended up working at the ABC for 5 years after that, and ended up, like, hosting Recovery, ended up hosting 1030 Slot, ended up doing some Triple J. Just feel very grateful that, you know, people, especially in Australia, if you have the interest, maybe it's true anywhere, but if you have the interest in maybe false bravado, I guess, that people usually let you facilitate having a go at stuff. Like, I've directed like 37 commercials. I've done a bunch of voiceovers. Not because that's what I want to do, like, forever. It's just because I have an interest, you know, albeit fleeting, in these things. And so,
well, that's the West Harbour in you.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think I was an actor.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh yeah, I'll have a go.
But someone gave you a ball and said, run through a brick wall, and you did it.
Well, tried to anyway, and I'm still trying to. I'm still hoping that I can improve on. I've got Mad Max coming out in a couple of weeks. I hope that that's better than the last Mad Max. I did. You know, years and years ago, I worked on a show called Secret Life of Us for, like, the forgotten season, like season 29 or something, you know, like, and
lost tapes.
The lost tapes. The very secret life. And Ben Mendelsohn was a guest on it as well. And I remember he had a South footy jumper on, and we were in Melbourne and in Williamstown, and he gave me some advice. I asked him for some advice, and he gave me some advice, and he said to me that working as an actor, jobs are like, you know, when you go surfing, they're like waves. Sometimes you get a good set,
yeah,
you know, and he goes, now you're obviously surfing a few good waves at the moment. He goes, but there'll be times where there aren't any waves or any jobs. And I realised, you know, from sort of chatting to him and other people that I looked up to, that it's, you got to stop trying to get it right in my industry. You know, there's this propensity to, oh, I want to be Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp wants to be Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt wants to be Paul Newman. Like, it's just never, never ending.
Brad Pitt really wants to have his own line of salad dressings.
<you know>? do you ever get envious of those guys who just have one thing in mind and they have an opus? One that comes to mind of late in Australia is Scott Ryan with Mr. Inbetweeners. You know, you might have heard of him before, but you probably won't hear from him again unless he decides he wants to do something else. But that was what he wanted to do. And you see this with occasionally with filmmakers and actors where there's like, oh, there's just one thing. You know, I think one thing could be said for, you know, Frida Kahlo with Selma. That was her, that was it, right? Everything she does after this is all good, but this is what it was about for her.
Well, I mean, let's not throw out Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, she was very... I haven't thought of a python in the same way since, but...
Yeah, that's an incredible scene, you're right.
I mean, Scott, for example, I met him many, many years ago. I don't know Scott personally, but I met him many years ago at Melbourne Underground Film Festival when he was screening The Magician, which was the precursor to this in between, I believe. And the producer of that series, the wonderful Michelle Bennett, who also did Chopper and many other amazing films and TV shows, she told me that Scott has been offered a bunch of roles in Hollywood and he's turned them all down.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of go, oh, I wish I...
Yeah.
I'm still unsure enough that I'm here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think there's something cooler about Scott going, oh, no, I want to drive cabs in Echuca.
Yeah.
I've done that, you know. You know, like, after I made a film with some friends, at the end of it, I was like, oh, just, I was so spent.
Yeah.
You know, they tell you you've got to make the film three times, write it, film it, and then sell it. And I was so out of my depth, and I thought I could sort of charm everyone. By the end of it, I was just like, oh, I really need a break from filmmaking and film altogether. And
which film was this? Was this The Mule? Were you in on that? Or like
The Mule, yeah.
The Mule's a great film, mate.
Thank you, mate. I mean, lots of great people.
It has a little bit of that Australian, like if you're in the know or you've just moved to Australia, gets recommended to people. That's where it's at. You know?
And I got cast in Fargo off the back of it.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for the crew and the cast of The Mule and Screen Australia and Film Vic.
There's a golden era now, I think, in Australian, with streaming. There's a golden era in Australian series, right? We saw, you know, the most successful kind of production in Australian history, at least numbers-wise in this world, with The Boy Swallows Universe came out the other day and it, you know, did big numbers. It was number two in America on Netflix. And
wow, that's huge.
But there is, like, you know, there's an abundance now coming out. And you've kind of ridden that wave in, you know, to follow Mendo's kind of metaphor here. You've ridden this set and you've made the transition, although it's something you've been able to do for like 10, 20 years now, into kind of patriarchal figure. We're seeing it now with, you know, with the next season of Heartbreak High where you're playing, you know, the... Sir, Yes Sir PE teacher. Have you seen in yourself different sets come in when you go, all right, well, right now I'm playing like the larrikin, young lad. Right now I'm playing the twisted flesh loving, you know, fucking Mad Max desert punk dude. And then, you know, in Australia, on a television level, you're now playing, you know, Bump and Netflix. Are you seeing those things come through? And is it like a domino thing when you've, all right, Angus Sampson can play the dad here, we've realised. PE teacher's next.
I didn't work in Australia from, like, 2013 to 2020. Mm. And if I did, forgive me if I did, but it certainly felt like I hadn't.
Yeah.
That's a long time. And so... I was very grateful to get any call to go to Australia and work opposite with and opposite and beside Claudia Carver. Mm-hmm. that was the first time I had been put in as a grown-up, like as a father or somebody.
Yeah.
And that was 2020, the first season of Bump. We're about to shoot the fifth season of it, and at the end of June we start. And so then I guess it begets other things. I mean, I've always tried to just pop up in random things, you know. I usually have a connection to it. For example, I would have been asked to have been on about 80 podcasts. This is my first one ever.
Thank you, by the way. And you beat Tyker. Well, Tyker's been kicking the can down the road since the start of the pandemic when he was lost in Australia, and we were the ones who were showing him around the back alleys, I guess. And every time we catch up and get on the lash, he'd be like, "Yeah, mate, I'm coming on." So we will get him one day,
mate. He's filming in Auckland at the moment. I don't have an issue on the size of my roles. I was talking to a friend the other night. She's in a band. She'd been asked to go on tours and bills, and it's important to her where they are on the bill, on the listing. She's like, "Oh, it would have been great to go on that tour, but we would have been number three, and we don't do anything under two." Mm. And I'm like, "Wow, okay." I was told, remember that guy Charles Bud Tingwall?
I was told, Bud.
him and Danny Trejo, you may know from Machete and Heat, amongst others. He never says no to a job.
Yeah.
So if you're an Australian filmmaker now, send him the script, he'll say yes. They never say no to a job. Whereas I'm the opposite. I'm always like, why would I do that? Why would I do that? And once that started happening, I started to get work.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just want to be compelling. And so I haven't worked it out yet.
A little bit of hard to get there.
I think so. And with Heartbreak High, the wonderful Heartbreak High, which the way I came about to be joining Heartbreak High season two was that they shared a production office. They had asked me to do the show. I wasn't available. Then they shared a production office with Bump, and they very kindly said, "Oh, yeah, you can have Angus." And they're like, "What?" And so I actually didn't end up being in the first three episodes of season four of Bump, so I could do this anti-woke PE teacher for Heartbreak High. And I knew Gracie Otto, the director. I knew Neil Sharma from Thor. I knew Adam and Jesse Oldfield. I knew them socially. So I guess it's one of those things, I guess, in answer to that, does it lead to the other things? Yeah, it always does. No one's talking to you at recess. Martin Scorsese casts you in something, and at lunchtime, everyone's your mate, you know, and it's such a schoolyard. I enjoy, popping up in random stuff, random roles, in random countries, with random people.
You're kind of emphasizing the blue collar element of the acting career, and we've had a few actors say that, you know what I mean? That's, interestingly enough, that's why these strikes are important, because everyone on set's got a different union and everyone's effectively waiting on jobs and doing jobs, and wherever they go, everyone kind of has to operate in a way you're saying, where you got to know people, or you don't have to know people, but it helps if you know people, and you're working, and then you get the big jobs.
Well, I think it's probably true for you as well, up in Batuta, it's your own context. I used to think that there was like a table of people, like in a chorus line, like testing out ensemble dancers in the dark, and they determined who was in which films, and they were like, you can be in Aliens, and we're also going to put you in Queen and Slim, and it turns out that your mum's Andie MacDowell. It's a real misconception from me that there is some tastemakers that decide that, but you get to Los Angeles And it's just who wants it the most for a lot of people, and I don't want it.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't want it. I just go, I'm an option. That's all. I'm an option.
But has there been something, that's popped up, or you've heard about something going into production, or you've heard about something being optioned and you've gone, ooh.
For sure. But the reality is, right, I wanted to be in Game of Thrones.
Right.
when that was on air, I was like, why am I in Game of Thrones? I actually look like I'm in that show already. And then I was like, you have this idea that agents and managers and, you know, are out there like, you know, sort of walking the beat, knocking on production office and slipping your resume under the things. They don't, you know. I mean, I reckon I've had 4 weeks off in like since 2020, which is weird for me because I've got no work ethic.
Yeah.
So it's like, but in answer to that, yes, the more famous you become, the more success you have here, the more people just contact you out of the blue. You start going to these dinners, like you realize people don't actually socialize in public anymore.
Yeah.
Start going from house to house in the hills. Lunch to, you know, dinners to drinks in the hills. And then it's the producer of White Lotus at Gerard Butler's house.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, everyone says I'm meant to, can't believe I haven't met you, Angus. In your head, you're like, well, cast me in it, you know, put me in White Lotus. But that's probably going to lead me to getting that job rather than me auditioning via a casting agent in Santa Monica. So
casting and audition thing is kind of like, it's the footballers that haven't come up through the grades. You know, it's the kids that get seen in a YouTube video and then they become, you know, a touch football competition in the North Island of New Zealand. A kid gets seen in a video and then he ends up in the Broncos. That's what casting is. Whereas you've come up through the grades, you're a nut trucker from way back.
I just want to be around people whose taste and intellect I admire, and they don't make me feel bad for wanting to be around them. This town that I'm in and live in, they do make you feel bad for wanting to be around. You know, there's a real us and them vibe, and it can be quite demoralizing. You know, you've got to be careful with what you covet.
Yeah.
You know, and so you covet what you see. So it's important. As what does he say? Dr. Lecter says that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Why do you guys do what you do? I just want to keep playing. And, you know, the older you get, the weirder it becomes.
Well, I want to ask about this with Netflix, right? You've traditionally played, you know, you've got range. As we said, you can play a fucking drug mule. You can play a cuddly dad on Bump. Now you're playing a man that I actually don't think you would go fishing with. You're playing the anti-work PE teacher.
Listen, he's not a nasty person, but he's also not a... I just think he's a bit of a relic, that's all. I won't say he's nasty. He's just a relic. Yeah, he's just off a different time. And as Angus, going into work with this fabulous cast on Heartbreak for their second season, I'd never felt more old in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're like 12 and 13-year-olds, but they were using jargon and idioms and what have you that I had. I'm like, what are you saying? Slay. So,
Angus is really giving Aaron Woods.
Yeah.
Angus is giving Batuta.
You are Batuta. And so I don't know if speaking out of school, but they said that after the first season, some people were saying, well, it's all very woke. Heartbreak High is incredibly woke. So Voss, the PE teacher, is a champion of men's rights in season two. he's very much about not having people turn into man haters just for the males to be masculine and push tires and dig and eat pork. I had so much fun doing it that, you know, there's a little element of, you know, a bit of Eureka Stockade, Peter Laylor. Not that he, I don't know. Look,
the wokest thing about Heartbreak High was the fact that they had all these kids that were living in these fucking houses that were a stone's throw away from a beach in Sydney that were going to a fucking public school. That was the wokest thing about that. I mean, in real life, those kids would be wearing a tie to school, wearing bloody knee-high socks and a fucking city hat.
But I did like that they explored the gay esche, because I have seen a few of those fellas around.
Look, it's interesting you say that, because, you know, we filmed at South Sydney High, which I guess is sort of like La Perouse, I suppose, or Maroubra, down that way. It was interesting, you know, we were shooting while school was going. And apparently that school got 800 more enrollments after the first
season. You're right, of course.
In reality. But it's interesting, you know, you meet these incredibly beautiful and clever cast. They're so well designed and they're so attractive and they're all, you know, they're sort of the complete package. And you're like, wow, they really, I guess this is what public school is like. And then you find out they went to King's and Geelong Grammar. And you're like, oh, cool. I guess this is not Hartley High sort of for real. I guess when I didn't think it needed to be a documentary, we just had so much fun making this season. I certainly did. Probably why it won an international Emmy, and it was like top 10, I think, in 43 countries the first season of it for Netflix. So it's, you know, it's... I remember when it was out in the 90s, I never, ever watched it. But I remember it was really big in France for some reason. Yeah, there's a couple of other new cast members.
I'll tell you what was a wig out for us was we went to the Arias last year for the first time. And obviously when you get invited you're not in the running for anything. You're just there for the, for the party. And same thing happened with the Logies last year. They invited us to the Logies, but our show wasn't nominated because it was too laid out. So this year's Logies will be our real one. But last year's Arias, all of the Heartbreak High kids were there in the same kind of kit they were wearing in the show and had peeled off in like, the friendship groups from the show. It was freaking me out. No. Because I was like, they are Heartbreak High.
I had one night out with them in Surry Hills. And I can relate. I was like, wait, am I inside my TV show at the moment? They're a very tight crew. They all live together when we film. Yeah, a really congenial atmosphere. And I got to tell you, like, it makes me doubly happy to, you know, I get a bit sentimental. They're also utterly compelling and they seem to be wise beyond their years, very confident in their abilities. It was a real joy for me to be part of Heartbreak. And one bit of information I got from your podcast was that Ned Kelly was filmed in Braid. And we do have a little bit of Ned Kelly action happening.
Oh, beauty.
Season two. Yeah.
My favourite modern-day Ned Kelly reference was from the Samoan Western Sydney rap group 1-4, where they had these lyrics. My side's way too heavy, your goons ain't ready. Jump out the whip and ching them with my belly on, searching like Ned Kelly. So that's like a balaclava. Modern-day balaclava is Ned Kelly still getting referenced by the modern-day outlaws of Western Sydney drill rap.
I haven't listened to their music. I always see them in the tabloid paper. Always like, they seem to be coupled with the Penrith Panthers or something.
Yeah, they all have the same dance moves. But one of the boys has found God and is now a Mormon pastor, which is a terrific soap opera.
Result.
Turn of events. We've kept you. Thank you, by the way, your first ever podcast.
Mate, please feel free to. There's some rambling answers.
No, it's terrific stuff.
They're not even answers.
There's, you know, because we know that there's some Angus stands out there. They're going to listen to every single minute of this.
And people who like movies and are interested in how they're made.
Well, we know all the ins and outs of that now. And it's, you know, obviously a big inspiration for us over the years.
I feel like we should go over to LA in July.
Mm.
Have a bit of a look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you wait till July?
Because it's hot.
That's when I'm in Sydney. I'm coming to Sydney in July.
I thought, June to August. Yeah. I thought you were coming back in August. How about we head over there after the Olympics?
When's the Olympics?
August.
It's a good, look, any time you come over, it's a good time of year. I don't ever want to be here full time, and I also don't want to be in Australia full time, so... You know, it's
a good little setup you got there.
Well, let me tell you my ARIA story. I went to the ARIAs a few years in a row when we were doing recovery, And on one episode of Recovery, we had Natalie Imbruglia, and just before I was standing out the back of on set, and just before she went to go on, she said something to me, and I know she had something in her tooth, and she couldn't get rid of it. Like, I was like, oh no, it's the next one over, the next one. And they're like, please welcome next. And I ended up having to like fish it out of the teeth with my finger. And a few nights later, I'm at the Arias in Sydney having a yarn with her. And a couple of fellas come up behind me and sort of grab me and order to turn around. And I introduce Natalie to Daniel Johns.
Really?
Yeah. Fuck. Thanks to Angus Greg Evans.
We've got a bit of oil in this interview. I'm glad you waited a while to do your first interview and podcast and did it with us. We're going to link up, be that in July or some other month if we're over there or you're over here.
We can drink some dark beer in the depths of winter here.
Yes.
Yeah. It's mid-strengths in Queensland, isn't it? Isn't that the...
Yeah, it is.
I have a rule, right? if it's over 14 degrees, the top, then you drink... mid. If it's lower than 14, you drink 2 years old.
Are you talking Celsius?
Yeah. That's the temperature outside.
I'll just leave you. This is my favourite Queensland story. And it's not even a story. I went to visit a friend who was living up at Yorkie's Knob.
Oh, yeah.
And hadn't seen him for a while. He's a Tamworth fellow. He's a Qantas pilot now. And hadn't seen him for a while. And went up to stay with him for the weekend, and he said, "Oh, should we have a few beers?" I was like, "Sure." And he cracked it. I was like, "What are these? Mid strengths?" He's like, "Yeah, I only drink mid strengths now." I said, "Why?" He said, "It's too hot up here." I go, "What is mid strengths?" He goes, "Oh, you can drink more and not get as affected, inebriated." I said, "Oh, what? When did you stop?" He said, "Oh, I went to the races once. I went to the Cairns Cup," and he said, "I woke up the next day." He said, I didn't feel too bad. And he said, until I walked into the bathroom and looked at myself in the mirror, and there was a footprint on my throat, like on his shirt. On his white shirt. I was like, oh, that's a good enough reason to get off the full strength.
And then that's the anyway. That's the gift and the curse of 4X Gold. Because then you do drink them, the mid-strengths, they drink them like they can't ever get to that point. And yeah. And the problem is when you do get to that point with mid-strength, you tend to piss yourself because you've just taken in so much fluid.
Like usually after a big day at the races, usually on dark, all that you're doing is taking beer, warming it from 2 degrees up to 38 and then pissing it into a trough. I mean...
Do you ever drink RTs? We call them room temperatures. When you just don't have a fridge.
Here they're called Kimberly Cool.
Kimberly Cool.
Yeah.
Kimberly Cool. Wow. RTs. You can drink RTs if it's those gluten free ones. What are they? That's the sorghum.
Yeah. I have had the room temperature ones in England, and I don't mind them, but
it's rogue.
I just feel like you can. There's something special about the Boy Swallows Universe premiere was crazy because it was like peak Brisbane sweltering humidity and all of these Sydney fucking industry people were just about to pop with perspiration. And they also were just drinking, you know, when you're drinking to keep cool, and a lot of people missed the memo on the mid strength in Queensland when they were drinking to keep cool.
I need to watch that. I need to watch that show, Felix Cameron, the great Felix Cameron. Anything else you'd recommend?
Yeah, I'd watch an older movie, Love Serenade.
Miranda Otto.
Yeah,
mate, I know it well. In fact.
Good film.
You'll be pleased to know. I don't know if you remember the disc jockey character from Love Serenade, that Miranda and her sister, they fall in love with him. Shevtsov, he is in Furiosa.
Oh, really?
Is he?
Yeah. He plays the history man. He would stand on the back of my motorbike. as I would ride around the Monday plains, yeah, right, of Broken Hill. It was, I mean, why wouldn't you want to be an actor? Why wouldn't you want to?
I
do
know
this?
Broken Hill. We went out there and did some some youth work in Broken Hill last year or the year before.
Good on you.
And we were staying in the Mario's Palace, and you just forget those old country pubs that they are like the pipes are just the same from 200 years ago. And so we were just coming home full of piss and then drinking out of the tap in your room and just waking up so cruel. My tummy doesn't feel so good.
Yeah.
Mate, I don't know how accurate I am because it was a little while ago that I learnt this, but I was told when we were filming in Broken Hill that there are 6 sets of traffic lights above ground in Broken Hill, but below ground in the pit, I guess, or whatever it's called, the mine, there's 119 sets of traffic lights underground.
It's a wild old town. We were there when the Queen died. That was a couple of years ago. And Mario's Palace in the middle of town had the pride flag at half-mast for the Queen. I was like, only in Broken Hill do you see those two things.
That's very funny. You know, on that note, where the Priscilla pub that another actor in the next Mad Max is a gentleman by the name of Ian Roberts.
Oh, yes.
Cowboys captain.
Yes.
And they put Robbo in the Priscilla suite
while we were filming that.
Yes.
That wasn't the production decision. That was the program.
He's a good fellow. Could still play, I reckon.
He's carved from stone. Well, mate, when you come back here, we'll try and get you on the Batuta's Last Video Store.
Mate, I'd love that. Yeah, I saw that he interviewed Angela.
Yeah, he interviewed Angela White about her favourite films. But the great one is Polly Bennett. They're both great interviews, but the one that gave real industry insight was Polly Bennett, who's obviously the movement coach on Elvis and The Crown.
And Saltburn,
yeah. Hearing her yarn about all that really kind of opened our eyes.
Yeah, I watched that. Mm. I watched that interview. Mm. That was amazing. She said that was not going to be, originally that dance of Barry's was not going to be the end. Like, it wasn't going to be at the end.
Nah.
It was like
something they filmed, yeah.
Yeah. Batuta's coming, you know, News Corp like.
I know.
You got pilot fingers in everything.
I know. We've got this Queensland election coming up, so we're going to go full News Corp on that.
Are you?
Yeah, we're going to try and sway the result and you know, do what's best for us, really.
Finally.
Oh, and we've just had the election down in Tassie.
When we were filming Recovery, we'd have a break for Christmas for the ABC, and I'd go down to Tassie and I'd go and help Rouse about for the shearing. Some shearing team.
Tasmanian shearing. That would have been cool.
In Tasmania, yeah. And my highlight was meeting Ronnie Laycock's brother. I don't know if you remember Ronnie Laycock, a weightlifter who won the gold medal in the 1990 Commonwealth Games in Auckland. He later got done for steroids and he said that someone spiked his tea because he owed them money.
I do remember Ronnie. Fuck.
Mate, I had to kick him out once of the Burwood Hotel when I was 18. And he held onto the bar with one hand, and I had both my arms around his waist, trying to pull him. I'm like 107 kegs. He just stood there, pinching the bar. I couldn't move him. And he kept his bourbon, his Woodstock and Coke, in the glass at his mouth, like he kept drinking it. Like I was trying to, nothing moved.
Just pulling as hard as you can.
Yeah, and which reminded me of the other time I tried to be a bouncer. There was a guy that managed the Burwood Hotel, Kerry Gibson, and he had one arm and he played first grade for Western Suburbs Rugby League.
Right,
and he ran the security at Balmain Leagues. And they got me as an 18-year-old. I could be a bouncer. So they teamed me up with this guy on the run from the called Zoz. Zoz was best friends with Ronnie Laycock. Anyway, I do remember him getting kicked out of the Orient one night, and he took his shirt off and went around the corner and punched the guy through the glass. I was like, what? Anyway, this is who I got partnered up with. And because I was the youngest, they asked me to remove Jeff Fenwick from Balmain Leagues as an 18-year-old. I was like, come on, I'm not doing that. They're like, you got to go, Matt. And anyway, that's my claim to fame. I politely requested.
Yeah, you would have been
leaning
on, mate, your words for that one.
yeah. Anyway, that was my one night as a bouncer. Never again.
I love the
never again.
The sneaky through the window.
He got arrested. It was right opposite the cop shop in the Rocks. took his flannel off, wrapped it around his arm, and punched the bouncer through the window at the Orient. I was like, I've got to get out of this. I've got to stop working at these places. Like, I was 18. He was an international rugby player and a demolisher by trade, him and Ronnie Laycock.
Oh, the life and times of Ronnie. I'll be going down a rabbit hole on Ronnie later.
The Laycocks, mate. They're amazing cheerers, Tasmanian cheerers.
Yeah. That story, by the way, that story you just told me was very Forrest Gump. So we start in cheering in rural Tasmania, and then we're in the Burwood Hotel with Ronnie, who's now holding the bar, and then you escort Jeff Fenwick out of Balmain League. So, well, thank you, Angus. You're a great footballer. Come up through the grades, and we look forward to seeing a lot more from you, mate. Thank you for joining the Batuta Advocate podcast.
Thank you, gentlemen. Lots of love to you both.